Impact, a continuing series of talks based on modern and ancient wisdom. And here is our host, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Mission.
Today we have a somewhat of a different subject, talking about actions and convictions. Actions and convictions. As we know, every action originates in a thought. Once I go out of here, the first person I meet, do I embrace him in love or do I sock him in the mouth and knock him unconscious? It will depend on my thought at this moment, whether I have a thought of love or I have a thought of anger or I have a thought of hatred or prejudice or jealousy. So ultimately it is the thoughts and the emotions, the thoughts in the intellect and the emotions in the mind that decide the actions by the body. The body is incapable of acting on its own. My hand at this moment is moving because there is an inner impulse. What I am speaking at this moment started out as a thought. It started yesterday when I was reading and trying to gather the material and then crystallized through the day and then finally is appearing as speech. So which is also an action. Speech is as much an action as walking or, you know, raising your hand or whatever. So every action is an expression of thought. And the goal of spirituality, the goal of human endeavor, not only spiritual, but every human being, his or her goal has to be, how can I improve my actions and how can I improve my thoughts? Because unless I improve my thoughts, obviously the actions will be low, will be base, will be demeaning to my true nature as man, as an expression of God, as an expression of divinity. And when we talk about action, actions by themselves are neither holy nor unholy, they are neither right or wrong. It is the attitude that matters. I'd like to give an example. If somebody takes a machine gun and shoots down 20 people, you say, that's terrible, you know. Why? Because he walked into a school or he walked into a crowded supermarket and killed 20 people, and we see mass murderers do that. And such a person gets imprisoned, gets jailed, you know, psychiatric evaluation. But if that same person were to perform the action on the battlefront where the enemy is invading the country and the country is in danger, and when that person commits that same action, picks up a machine gun and shoots 20 people, we honor him. We give him a purple heart or a distinguished medal or a cross. Why? Because the action was not done with a selfish motive, with ego or egocentric, but was done for the service of the country, to protect my countrymen from danger. So the result of that is that every action that is done with ego or egocentric attitude is veiling the consciousness within us. We are, in fact, all of us are this divinity, which we call Om as the soul, but we have this layer of vasanas or selfish desires which veil this truth from us. That's why even though I sit for meditation, my mind does not stay in that silence. And it runs all over because of this vasanas, because of this selfishness. So they say actions, and what do we mean by ego and egocentric? People think of ego as having many meanings. One is that one should have an ego. Yeah, one should have a, you know, self-confidence. That's not what we mean. Ego also is considered, as some people, as pride. You know, he's very arrogant. That is also ego. But when we talk about ego and egocentric desires, what we mean is that when a person has the sense of doership and enjoyership, that I am doing it, the moment this I comes in any action, whatever action you perform, whether you are cooking, whether you are taking care of your patients, whether you are, you know, cleaning the house, whatever activity you are doing, whether you are working with clients in your business, as long as that ego is there, that I am the doer, of course, you know, you have to take care of your life and your family and your children. We're not saying that. But even that should be done without this sense of ego, that I am the doer. One should have the attitude that the Lord is working through me and I am working for the Lord. So I, the Lord, is serving all these other people who are the Lord themselves. So ultimately, they are all me. So that is called a lack of ego, where there is not even a sense, even the slightest sense of pride or arrogance or a feeling of superiority. That's what they say. There is a very beautiful song in Gujarati, you know, which is very popular. Mahatma Gandhi loved it, and he says, who is a true Vaishnava? Who is a true Christian? Who is a true Muslim? It's not a Christian is not a one who wears the cross. Vaishnava is not a one who wears the Krishna. Muslim is not a one who grows a beard or shaves his head or wears a cap. Who is a true Christian or a true Vaishnava? Who knows the sorrow of others. Who knows the sorrow of others. If you know the sorrow of others, then only you can call yourself a true Vaishnava. You can call yourself a true Christian. You can call yourself a true Muslim or a true Sikh. So if you say that I am a religious person, you have to know the sorrow of others. So that's the first line. But then the second line is even more powerful. He says, para dukhe upakar kare, to man abhiman na aaye, mane re. He says, even though this person is constantly serving others, he has not even the trace of pride in his mind that I am doing anything. So then only a person is called a truly religious. One who serves others, and second, has no pride in that service, and who knows the sorrow of others and tries to remove them. Again, not removing the sorrows with a selfish thing that, oh, by helping this person, he will be grateful to me, and then he will vote for me in the election or make me the, you know, head of the church or whatever. The idea is that I should serve them all as the manifestations of the Lord. So having talked about action, the rest of the talk, we will talk about convictions. So it says, how can I improve my thoughts? Remember we said thoughts, they improve the actions. Thoughts, they improve the actions. How can I improve my thoughts? So they say that one should have faith. It starts out with faith. I read something in the Bible or the Quran or the Guru Granth Sahib, and first I have faith in that knowledge, and that is good. Or I listen to a teacher, I listen to a good speaker, and his or her words touch me, so I have some faith. But then, that is very superficial. Okay, I believe in Jesus. Okay, that is good. Or I believe there is a God somewhere who created this world and created me. Okay, that is fine. But then that faith has to become deep conviction. You know, I read the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not cheat, and all those things. But then am I truly convinced that these teachings, whether it's the Gita or the Quran or the Bible, are really, really true and really applicable to me? So I have to be firmly convinced of my belief, of my faith, whatever I have understood. I have to be so firmly convinced that nothing can shake me from this faith. And we find in these great saints, there were saints in India who gave up their lives, you know, even rather than, you know, give up their faith or change to another religion, or they were, you know, I mean, so that type of firm belief in my own teachings, in my own faith. Or I pick up certain values, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not cheat, thou shalt be good. But then the moment a situation comes, you say, it's okay, you know, once in a while to cheat is all right, once in a while to lie, what's wrong, it's okay, I, you know, couldn't do it this time. But one should be totally firm in one's faith, in one's conviction, and then the ability to not waver from that understanding. And that is when faith turns into conviction. What we find is that we say, oh God, you know, he loves me so much and I love him. And then the moment I don't get the job, or the moment some sorrow comes, some illness comes, and we say, what is this God? You know, I don't know where he's sitting. I don't think he even knows about me. And we totally immediately turn away, or we start talking bad about him, or we say, from tomorrow I'm not going to go to church. It's no use. He doesn't even listen to me. So our faith is very superficial. It's more like a business. You know, I come to the church and light you a candle. In return, you give me a job. You know, or I take some flowers to the temple. In return, you give me $1 million. You know, what kind of business is that? You're offering a measly candle and then you're asking for $1 million? But that is our business with the Lord. We only love him as long as my children are taken care of, I am taken. So that is the extent of our faith. It's not firm conviction. And the moment I don't get what I want, forget it. So they say, how do you improve your faith? They say a deep study is necessary. You must faithfully study the scriptures. And do not just read it mechanically. Okay, you know, in the psalm number this and psalm number that, and you keep on chanting and this chapai and this. You know, not like that. But what does the essence of the teachings? What is really the truth that is being conveyed to me by Jesus or by Guru Nanak or by Krishna or by Buddha? What is he actually or she actually meaning? The saint or the prophet? And how, from what depth and from what knowledge that person is speaking from? One has to try and go to that same depth. Go to that same depth, because these prophets, they talk from a deep experience. They have actually experienced the truth. They have become one with the Lord. And when they speak, it comes from a personal experience. It's not something mechanical. While when we talk, maybe I have read a little bit here and there, and so I can come and speak a few sentences and it looks like I know a lot, but a lot of times it is just borrowed knowledge, what I have just read. So the knowledge has to become my experience, and for that a very deep study of the scriptures is necessary. That one go into the depth of the knowledge, and then whatever you have heard from a spiritual teacher, whatever you have read in the Bible or Quran or the Guru Granth Sahib, go home and think about it. Go home and contemplate upon it. Go home and meditate upon it. That is this really true? It may be written in the Bible, but is it really true? Yeah, one has to have faith in the scriptures, but still one should have the freedom to question. Just because Jesus said it, but I still want to see if it is really true, and I want to see if it applies in my life. If it is something that is practical, and as you apply that, as you practice it, you realize, yes, what Jesus was talking about was the truth. What Guru Nanak was saying is the truth. And so you become convinced of the truth by contemplating, by thinking about it. And as we will come to later on, by starting to apply that in our life. So we shall come to that in a while. But it says that convictions could be noble or could be demonic. You know, one can be convinced of doing the right thing, like Buddha. You know, where his idea was to serve the world and make the world non-violent. Or you could have the convictions of, you know, a terrorist who feels that by killing 60 or 70 or 80 people and by, you know, suicide bombing or whatever, I will go to heaven. And so that kind of a conviction is not noble, where you kill somebody who is innocent, kill somebody who has done no harm to you. Yes, in the war or in the battle, yeah, there may be some deaths, but so one has to be convinced of the path, and it has to be a noble conviction. That is very important. I have to constantly look at my beliefs. look at my convictions and say that, are they really noble? Are they really taking me upward? Are they taking me to a higher direction, a direction of love, of service, of brotherhood, of seeing oneness? And if there is a teacher or if there is a somebody who's trying to divide, you know, that you are superior and somebody else is inferior, or then that person one has to be very careful of. Or even in my own mind, I may have certain beliefs that certain races are superior, certain people are superior, certain sex. So all those differences have to be constantly questioned, constantly doubted. And so my convictions, I have to be constantly alert. And my mind always, I have to question what I believe in. That what I believe in, is it really right or is it wrong or is it applicable? And the truth is one that was true, is true, and will be true in the future. Only that which is permanent in the past, present, and future is the truth. Whatever changes cannot be the absolute truth. Then, as I said, this faith and conviction must become total belief, where I am so 100% convinced that no matter what kind of problems come in my life, no matter what kind of obstacles, I'll not waver from the path of whatever. But it has to be noble. Once I'm convinced that I'm on the noble path, then I should be firm in that path. And ultimately, the teaching should become a way of life. If I'm not going to apply what I have studied, what I have read, then that knowledge is useless. It is like a person studying medicine and then never sees a patient. You know, he passed all the exams, he got A grades, and he has all these big degrees and his, but he, you know, he can't see a patient. Or an engineer has all the degrees but does not know how to build a dam or how to build a road or how to build a factory. Then that knowledge is useless to that engineer. So similarly, when I get this knowledge from the scriptures, it has to change my life. I have to become a different person. I cannot keep on doing what I have been doing. I have to change my way of thinking. I have to improve myself. My negative qualities I have to slowly remove, fill my heart with positive qualities. And as you fill your heart with positive qualities, your selfishness reduces and you come closer to the truth, the Lord that is within your heart. Only thing that separates you from Him is our selfishness, our ego, our sense of separation. He actually is with us constantly. But because I have this ego, I think myself to be separate from Him. So when you start applying these convictions and these beliefs in your life, then they become like a lamp and they guide your path to evolution. This reminds me of a very beautiful story. There was this very steep mountain, 11 miles almost straight up, very steep. And for a person even in good health to climb, it took them minimum 6 hours, you know, 6-7 hours. And really hard work. And the thing was that you had to start your hike at 2 or 3 in the morning. Because if you started it late in that part of the world, the sun was so hot that by 8, 9 o'clock it was impossible to climb because the rocks were solid. There was no shade and it was like walking on coal. Used to get so hot. And so people had to, whoever wanted to hike, had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and hike that going up. So one day a young man decides, I'm going to tomorrow morning get up and hike. So he got up in the morning, and in those days they didn't have these powerful flashlights and all. He had this little lamp with some oil, and you know, there was enough oil to last him till 3-4 hours till the sun rose. And that lamp only illumined up to 10 feet. So beyond 10 feet he couldn't see. So he got up in the morning, got ready, got his hiking boots on, and then he lights the lamp, and then he sees the lamp goes 10 feet. He says, oh my God, the lamp goes only 10 feet and the mountain is 10 miles. How am I going to climb it? And how is this lamp going to show me that? He was discouraged. He was thinking. And suddenly this old man walks by. And he's trying to hike up the hills. He has his hiking boots on. He's very old. And he has a lamp that only illumines 5 feet. And he's started to climb up the hill. So he starts laughing at him. He says, "What are you doing? Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to climb up this hill." He said, "How can you climb? Your lamp only illumines 5 feet. My lamp illumines 10 feet and I'm still not going. How will you reach? How will this?" So the old man says, "Look, son, my lamp illumines 5 feet, right?" He said, "Yeah." He says, "I'll go walk 5 feet. And then my lamp will illumine another 5 feet. And then another 5 feet. And I will keep on walking till ultimately I reach." So that person felt so ashamed that look at this man's wisdom. So that is what they say, that these convictions become like that lamp that light our way. It may look like, you know, by living the life of truth, you know, how can I reach the highest goal? Or just by doing a little bit of service, a little, how can I reach it? But that conviction or that service or that little attitude of prayer or meditation or that small activity is like that lamp that takes us 5 feet. And as you keep on practicing it, you can keep going higher and higher and higher, ultimately till you reach the peak. So they say that when you have the convictions, then make them your lamp. And then keep on practicing it. And ultimately, slowly as you practice these convictions, these noble convictions of love and charity and compassion, they will light your way to the higher truth. So make them your way of life. Make them your way of practice. The last point I'd like to make, and which I think is also very important, is that one should be progressive and not conservative. Because we find that people become very rigid in their beliefs. It's like, you know, it's like a doctor who had practiced 20, 30 years ago, and when we only had penicillin and one or two antibiotics, and he'll say, "No matter which antibiotic comes, I don't care, I'm only going to give penicillin to every patient." And we have so many new antibiotics, new techniques, and a doctor who has to be progressive. He has to keep up with the journals, keep up with the science. But in spirituality, we become very rigid. We do not want to change. Whatever I believed in is the absolute truth. Yes, one should have faith in the scriptures, have faith in the teacher, but ultimately one also has to change with the times. I'm not saying that the fundamental truths will change. But my inner beliefs, I should constantly question. And two things. One is that mine is not the only right way. See, when we become conservative, then we say, this is the, like Republicans. Republican is the only way. Democrats are all fools. And Democrats say, Democratic path is the way. Republicans should be all shot. So that is, you know, called. But we become like that. That Christianity is the only way, or Buddhism is the only way, or Sikhism is the best, and everything else is no good. But I have to give allowance for others' beliefs, just as I have my belief. Some people say the path of love is the only way to reach God. Another person said the path of knowledge, you have to know who He is. The people who love Him are ignorant people, you know, who have no intelligence, so they don't have the ability to think. So that is called being conservative. Be progressive. Be willing to change your opinions. Be willing to accommodate others' beliefs, as long as these beliefs are not contrary to what is good, what is helpful, what is beneficial. So I have to be willing to accept new ideas and also make allowance for others. And that's what the beauty of this country is, that everybody has the freedom to practice their own religion, to practice their own faith, you know, to have a building like that. In a lot of countries of the world, we would not be allowed to do that. So I think that is what one has to take from this, that accommodate others' views. At the same time, do not be too rigid or too conservative or too bound by just one thing is right and nothing else is wrong, right? And as I am, new thoughts come and new ideas come, and also as I grow, you know, certain things I, as a child I believed, now we no longer believe it, like we believed the earth was flat. And then Galileo and Copernicus and all the great scientists told us the earth is round and the earth revolves around the sun. And we accepted that, though we killed those people. At that time, they were all killed because they held this belief that the earth is not the center of the universe. But so also in my learning, I have to grow, I have to evolve. And the idea is that as long as I'm constantly growing, it doesn't matter. You know, as long as I'm growing closer towards Him, it really doesn't matter. Oh Lord, wherever you put me, in whatever circumstances you put me, whatever problems or good things happen in my life, just remember I should not forget you. And all the saints prayed for that. Lord, may I not forget you. I don't care whatever problems come, whatever sorrows come. As long as I can constantly remember you and grow towards you, it doesn't matter. That is the only thing that matters. And so this is the brief talk today, where we have talked about how our actions start with thoughts and how the thoughts can be improved with right faith, conviction, belief, and then action, where we believe and then we act on what we believe, and that is how we evolve and make ourselves better people. Thank you.
This concludes this segment of Impact with Dr. Anil Mehta. Join us again next time.